Christmas and a Happy New Year. Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And now is the time to get those dreams out of the closet, dust them off, jot them down on a sheet of paper, and get ready for the new year. I am somebody who is really into numbers. I'm not a numerologist of any sort, but there's something about numbers that is so intriguing to me. I see numbers in colors. Each number has a different color, and then when you put those numbers together, you have the combinations, and it's 2010 looks so cool to me in my head, and probably it's the only place that it looks cool is in my head. But I hope that you're looking forward to the new year. You do know that it is the beginning of a new decade. 2010 starts the second decade of the 21st century, if you can believe that. It's a really cool thing. And of course, I remember back in 1999 when everybody was quibbling over, well, is it 2000, the turn of the century, or is it 2001? And I believe it was the year 2000 when we began our sojourn into the futuristic now present day 21st century. We don't have the Jetsons air cars yet. We're getting there, and if that's what we really want. This program comes your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m., and that's Pacific time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com. That's RICHARDDUGAN.com, richarddugan.com. And you can go to our website. You can check out the folks that we have coming up on the program in the coming weeks and months, and you can also listen to previous broadcasts of this program going back to September 7, 2007. And it's amazing that we have been on the air with this program for that long, and we're excited about it too, so it's a lot of fun. Today's guest is a return visitor to our microphones, to our phone lines, to the airwaves, if you will, and to the internet for us, and it is Edie Weinstein. And we last spoke, Edie. I'm almost feeling like I'm going to pick up where I left off at the end of the last interview saying, I understand that you're working on a new book and we'll have you on the program in about 6 months to talk about it. And we'll talk about that new book or where in transition it is as we move forward. You are an ordained minister. Mm-hmm. You also have a website, liveinjoy.com.
No, it's .org.
I beg your pardon, .org. Okay. Liveinjoy.org. And you're also involved, as we spoke in our first interview, with a group. Actually, it's not just a group where you live, but it's I don't know, not a movement exactly, but it's a group of people that gather together around the country in different places to hold what are called cuddle parties. And I kind of euphemistically refer to them as pajama parties. And the pajamas stay on.
Yes, absolutely.
And we'll talk a little bit about that as well. It's good to have you back.
Thank you. It's good to be back. 6 months ago when I was here, it was hot and sunny and sweltery, and now it's a normal. I'm talking to you from the Philadelphia area where we just had a blizzard a week ago, and now it's floody and rainy the day after Christmas.
So it's not exactly a winter wonderland is what you're saying.
Not today. I'm glad to be inside.
I'm glad to be inside too, but we've got a beautiful weather here. It's cool, and it's got some clouds, possibility some little rain here in the next 24, 36 hours. But all in all, it's nice to sit here beside the fire, so to speak, and chat about things to come, things that have been. I was downloading some materials from a news source, and they were referring to this series of vignettes that I was downloading as this news source remembers 2009. And jokingly, I said, who wants to remember 2009? It wasn't that great. And yet, as we chatted just before the program started, you were rattling off all kinds of wonderful changes in your life in 2009.
Absolutely. Since the last time we spoke, a lot of transformation has taken place. One of the biggest things that's happened is that I've decided to go back to my birth name. When I was on the show before, it was Edie Weinstein Moser. And about 3 weeks, a month ago, I started working with a life coach. Her name is Irene Boychuk, and she's just amazing. She's in the Philadelphia area as well. And as we were talking, she said, if what you want to do is to move on in your life with relationship, with career, energetically, why are you still using your husband's last name since he's been gone for 11 years? My husband died 11 years ago, December 21st. And I said, well, it's been my name for 22 years. It's how people know me. But she said, you are not writing this book with that last name. You need to change it. Now, Irene has known me a lot of years, and she's a kick-ass coach. So when Irene speaks, I listen. I said, okay, let's play with it a little bit. So she had me sit back and close my eyes and envision what my life would be like as Edie Weinstein instead of Edie Weinstein Moser. And I said, well, you know what? It's Edie Weinstein was my name longer than I had the hyphenated last name.
Mm-hmm.
And I did pretty well with that. It was okay. So I had that for 30-some years, and it felt comfortable, and I envisioned what it would be like to be able to move on in my life, to fully let go. Last year, and some of the work that I do now is around bereavement, grief, working with people who've lost loved ones, and last year was a 10-year mark of my husband's death, and it was kind of like a last purging of the grief of the good, the bad, the ugly that everybody has in their marriage, and letting go of the loss of the life itself,
mm-hmm.
the life, his life, our lives together, was a final let go. So this year, around the holidays, I was able to really be present to the beauty, to the wonder, to the magic, with no grief, not even a shred of grief this year.
Hmm.
And that was a big change for me. And I think the name change had a lot to do with it. The love is still there. That's not going anywhere. But it does really feel time to move on in my life.
Wow.
In every way imaginable.
I mean, there are folks who go through divorces and are still grieving.
Oh, yeah.
20 years later.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean, again, that the marriage wasn't wonderful in some cases, and,
mm-hmm.
and that that I don't miss his physical presence, but it means that it's moving on.
Yeah.
When someone you love dies, you don't get over it, you just get on with it, and you move on in your life, and that's where I am right now, really, really fully taking that leap. Another thing that occurred this past summer, probably right after you and I spoke, is that I was tapped to be on what I came to call team transformation. I'm part of an interfaith community in the Philadelphia area called Common Ground Fellowship, and the website for that is commongroundfellowship.com. And we brought in Michael Beckwith and Ricky Byers Beckwith, the folks from the Agape Cathedral out in California.
In Los Angeles, yeah.
Yeah. And we brought them in, and I was what I came to call the PR goddess. It was my job to help fill the seats. And we had 1,200 people there.
Wow.
I had never taken on, and I've done PR for friends, mm-hmm. Here, there, everywhere, but nothing of this scope. And that event, I would dare say, transformed the lives of everybody involved, because it gave me a sense of, if I can do that, I can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big leap. And since then, I've taken on more PR jobs, opportunities, what have you, and I've become more shamelessly self-promoting. When you're in business for yourself, regardless of what it is, you got to be.
Yeah.
Too many of us in the holistic and spiritual fields feel like, oh, it's not nice to brag about ourselves. It's not nice. It's not appropriate to be making money doing this. My electric company doesn't care that I'm an interfaith minister. Doesn't
right.
care that I do spiritual work.
Mm-hmm.
They want to get paid.
They want to get paid.
So in order for them to get paid, I have to get paid.
Yeah.
And you have to get paid
yeah.
for you to pay your bills. So that was a big, big leap for me, too. I am still doing cuddle parties, and as you said, we can talk more about that. But I'm also now the editor of the Cuddle Party newsletter, which is twice a month, not only just a listing of the cuddle parties that happen worldwide. It's not just the United States. It's all over the world now. But little tidbits about touch, communication, hugging, cuddling, everything imaginable. So I was tapped to do that because I have 10 years experience publishing a magazine. So this is a snap in
yeah.
the grand scheme of things.
Sure.
So I'm doing that, and then I've been asked to be on the advisory board for Cuddle Party. And 5 years ago, I didn't even know it existed, that the workshop existed. So that's been a huge leap. And what else am I doing? Oh, I've picked up a number of different venues for which I write. In addition to magazines, I'm also writing for, there's a magazine called More for Women Over 40, and I write for their website called More.com. I write for a website called DivaToolbox.com. And both of those are, I would say, for women's empowerment, ways of helping women feel more at home in their own skin, in their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a big thing, too.
Yeah. We're going to try to touch on as many of those as we can in our program today, and if necessary, we will carry it over into what we'd like to call an after interview that will be at the end of the interview that you can only hear on the website. We'll let you know about that as we move forward. We're going to continue talking with Edie Weinstein and more about liveenjoy.org, as well as, is it cuddleparty.com? It is,
yeah.
That is a .com.
Cuddleparty.com.
And we're also going to talk about your book, In Progress, In Process, because I had an experience I'm thinking 10 or 15 years ago back in Phoenix, that sort of relates to what we had chatted about off air before the program. And I think that this will be interesting for a lot of people to hear and possibly even discuss with us. Here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, I'm Richard Dugan. Stay with us.
How much is a life worth to you? If everyone in our area donated $5, cost of a fancy cup of coffee, to our local American Red Cross, we'd have enough money to ensure our entire community safety during disasters. This holiday season, look for Red Cross canisters at local retailers or make a donation online at $5SavesALife.org. That's $5SavesALife.org.
You have a message that others can benefit from. A meditation to share. A talk to give that you want heard by more than just those present. A workshop, seminar, presentation with speakers whose information, insight, and inspiration can help others to break through to their highest potential and purpose. Making a quality recording is the first step to making it available, and fast forward is the right direction. They'll bring the recording studio to you. Your message is important. It needs to be recorded by professionals who share your passion and want to provide quality recording to those who want and need to hear it. Call 805-708-9804 to take that first step. 805-708-9804. Call Fast Forward for all your recording needs on location and in studio. 805-708-9804.
Have you lost direction in life? Do you constantly worry or give to others but deny your own heart? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
Tell me your story. New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan on this beautiful Saturday. It's December the 26th, 2009, as we head into the last few days of this year and this decade, heading into the second decade of the 21st century. And we're doing that with my guest, Edie Weinstein. And you have been working since we spoke last. You were even working on it then, and you're still in the process of finishing it up and getting it ready to go to print. A new book that will be coming out, hopefully early 2010. Now, by the way, I love the fact that now I can say it that way, 2010. It's concise and it sounds And looks pretty cool, like I said, in my head. Mm-hmm. But what is this this book about?
Well, the title is The Bliss Mistress Guide to Transforming the Ordinary into the Extraordinary. And just kind of a way of letting you know where that title came from, I teach a workshop called BYOB, Be Your Own Bliss. And it's based on the idea, if you remember Joseph Campbell, who mm-hmm. encouraged people to follow their bliss. I like that concept. However, it feels limiting because if you're following your bliss, it's still something outside of you. If you be your own bliss, then you live as bliss, you live as love, you live as joy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the workshop title came from. A couple of years ago, I was walking into teaching the workshop, and one of the women there said, "Oh, you're the Bliss Master." And when I mentioned that to a friend, he said, "Oh, no, Bliss Mistress." And it has a little bit of intrigue to it. Keeps people wondering.
Mm-hmm.
So when you live, you yourself as a man live as a Bliss Master, or a woman lives as a Bliss Mistress, you claim that bliss as your own. And for some people, bliss is eating mint chocolate chip ice cream. That's one of my blisses.
Ah.
For some people, bliss is talking to a friend or sitting around a fire or an accomplishment of a lifelong goal. And it's everybody's choice as to how they live their bliss, how they be their own bliss. So the book is a series of anecdotes over the last, I think they were all written over the last year or so. When I write, and people have told me this, both people that know me and that don't know me, people experience, the reader experiences vicariously what I'm living.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are stories, like Chicken Soup for the Soul type stories, with exercises at the end, questions, dialogue with yourself, inquiry with yourself. And some of the book is talking about people who've inspired me, people who live juicy, people who just grab hold of life and don't let it go.
Yeah.
So that's what the book is about. And my intention when you and I had spoken in June was to have it finished by now, but life kind of got in the way.
Mm-hmm.
But life is what inspires the book. And this friend who dubbed me Bliss Mistress said, "You know what, if you're going to write this book, you better be living it." So I'm still in the process. I'm doing research, I guess you could call it.
Well, that's good.
Call it that, yeah. So the work that I've been doing, the play that I've been doing, and I've learned to call them both one and the same, work and play, is grist for the mill, like Ram Dass would say. Mm-hmm. Grist for the mill, chapters for the book.
Yeah.
My challenge has been to fully live the experience without thinking, oh, how am I going to write about this? How am I going to let people know what's happening? I need to be able to fully embrace it, and I'm learning to do that myself, to let it just be for me for right now,
mm-hmm.
and then put it in writing. So that's
now,
what I'm doing with the book.
Now, on Monday, I made two phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Monday. I made two phone calls, one to your cell phone and one to your landline, and just as a follow-up, hey, we've got an interview this Saturday. I hope you're ready. And to which you emailed me back, in essence saying, however, the book isn't quite finished yet. Now, to that end, certainly I am not disappointed. It is not my book, although
right.
I find the subject matter very intriguing, and we'll talk further about it. How did that make you feel at the time you realized, I told him I was going to have that book ready, and I don't have it ready, and what am I going to do?
Right. Well, the part of me that believes in doing what I say, saying what I mean,
mm-hmm.
was feeling guilty, like, oh no, I didn't keep my word.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've learned, and this ties into Cuddle Party as well, which we'll talk about in a little bit, is that if I'm changing my mind or if I'm not able to do what I say, I renegotiate. So I renegotiated with myself long before I told you.
Okay.
Where I said, okay, this book is not going to be done by the end of the year, and it's still a work in progress just like I am. There's obviously more to the story that needs to be written
mm-hmm.
before the book is completed. And I can't say I let myself off the hook, but I've had a very difficult time, how would I describe it, backing down from what I say I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
That integrity really matters to me, and I want this book to be birthed, but there's still a lot of fear. I've talked to other friends who are authors, some best-selling authors, and I've said, what do you do when you come up against that fear? And they've said, what's the fear about? Just like most writers, there's a sense of, this is my baby, and I don't want somebody looking in the stroller saying, thinking, oh, what a funny looking baby. You know? Like, oh, what if they don't like it? And what if, you know, what if I invest all this time and energy in it and nobody likes it? And, you know? So I go through that dialogue in my head. And I don't know whether we had talked about this initially, but I know that I had spoken with another interviewer over the last few months about the process of writing the book, that writing articles for magazines is far easier, far more immediately soul-satisfying than writing a book, because I have an assignment, I send the article in, it's done, it gets published, boom, it's out. And I likened it to developing a relationship. It's easier to have short-term relationships than it is a long-term committed relationship where you're in it for all it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm balancing both of those things in my life right now, working toward the idea of a committed relationship after having been married for almost 12 years and having been widowed almost 11, you know, now 11 years. The 21st was 11 years. So it's the same thing with my book, that rather than tiptoeing into, oh, an article here, an article there, I'm needing to commit myself to finishing this book.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the process as well.
I know every book is different, and you've already written one, right?
Well, I have a book another book in process. I don't have any other books published.
Okay.
But over the last 20 years, I've interviewed, I don't know how many hundreds of what I call movers and shakers, but a friend of mine refers to them as wisdom teachers. And these are people who are well-known authors, speakers, teachers, healers, musicians. And people have been nudging me to compile them into a book.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems a whole lot simpler since I already have the text.
Right.
So that's a simultaneous project.
Right.
Yeah.
I have to say that maybe one way of looking at the book on bliss as the bliss mistress, because it is literally little vignettes, little stories throughout, anecdotes and so forth, maybe looking at each one as one of those magazine articles that you write and just saying, okay, that one's done. Okay, great. And now that one's done.
Yes.
And by the time you know it, you're going to have an encyclopedia that you'll be putting out.
Absolutely. Well, that would be lovely.
So we look forward to, of course, when that book does come out and certainly encourage people to start to take that title and incorporate it in terms of making the ordinary extraordinary, seeing it as such.
Mm-hmm. You were telling me a story during the break about that, about how you transform the ordinary to the extraordinary in your own life.
Well, I have to say that I've been doing it since I was a kid, a small kid, a single-digit years. And at times it would annoy the adults because they thought, oh, what is his problem? But I had an experience after I had my lens implant in 1996, March 6th of 96. And as I said at the beginning of the program, numbers, there's something about them. And that sequence right there was rather auspicious. The original date for that surgery, by the way, was actually, I think it was February the 11th. Of 1996. Well, I had an adverse reaction to the process in testing, so they ended up bumping it into March. But after the surgery, I had my driver's license, and certainly hadn't really planned on driving any time in my lifetime. Just I had accepted the fact that, hey, this is just the way I am. I'll bicycle till I fall off the thing at 90 or something. But there I am, I'm heading off to Mayo Clinic to pick up my wife at the time, and I pull into a fast food restaurant drive-thru, ordering fries and a strawberry shake. Yes, I do remember what I ordered. And I drove out, and I was just like, wow, that was really cool. That was a lot of fun. Now, most people, they don't think twice about that. And I get to the Mayo Clinic, and I pick up my wife, and I say, you're not going to believe what I just did. For the first time, I actually drove through a fast food restaurant, and I ordered fries and a drink and drove off, and it was just so cool, and I just love it. And I hadn't even thought about driving on L.A. freeways, and now I've done that. And I drive the 101 all the time and the 154 up and down, sometimes twice a day. And it is truly extraordinary considering where my life started. And the first 36 years thereof. So for me, that is an extraordinary event, and lots of others as well. Again, I keep trying to nudge myself anytime I get complacent as I'm driving. Wow, here you are. You're doing 65 miles an hour, 75, whatever it is, down the freeway, heading for a particular destination. You're going to Burbank to record a session, a seminar. You're going up to Santa Maria to have lunch or whatever it is. Wow, this is pretty cool. But most folks who've been driving since they were 16, not a big deal.
Mm-hmm. But you can't afford to take anything for granted, is what it sounds like.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Tell me, go ahead.
I was going to say, it sounds like you celebrate every day, and that makes even the small moments feel huge. One of my favorite Dan Millman books is it's called No Ordinary Moments. The idea that there really are no ordinary moments, that everything is extraordinary. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't compare them. You know, that some people will say, well, if everything is extraordinary, then we can't appreciate anything. And I beg to differ with that, that in my life, I can put an extraordinary spin on anything,
uh-huh.
even something uncomfortable or unpleasant. Learning to, it's trite to say make lemons out of lemonades, but mm-hmm. to become an alchemist, to be able to turn lead into gold.
Yeah.
And something as simple as that most people take for granted, as you said, is going through a drive-through and ordering, strawberry shake and French fries. That's a big deal to you.
Yeah. Even today, with I took an aptitude test at 19, and it said I was supposed to be a farmer. And I'm going, yeah, right. I live in Phoenix. I'm a city boy. And, of course, the next thing I know, I'm in radio.
Mm-hmm.
I now find myself as a farmer. I've got chickens, and we've got a mm-hmm. little land, and mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, there was something in that aptitude test.
Yeah.
There is also something that's happening here. We have a call.
Uh-huh.
I haven't even given out a phone number, but somebody's called. 805-564-1290. If you're outside the area, 866-564-1290. You can talk with Edie. And we have Sandy from Souderton, Pennsylvania.
Hi, sweetie.
Well, hello to you.
Hi.
Sandy. And how do the two of you know each other?
Well, Sandy and I are dear friends, and she is what I call a chiropractor with hands and heart of gold.
Oh, a true alchemist.
Yes, she absolutely is.
Absolutely. I just wanted to bring up a point, Edie, and that's the importance of, in the time that we set our goals, making sure that we're putting ourselves number one in that goal and taking care of ourselves, taking care of our health. Make sure that we're getting our spines checked for flexibility and mobility and balance and exercising, eating properly, thinking the right thoughts, and getting the right amount of sleep. Because without taking care of us, all of the goals that we have in life cannot be accomplished, no matter how little or large they are. We have to take care of us first. And I find that that's one of the things that I appreciate about you, is that you do that, and that comes out in everything that you do.
Oh, I'm honored. But and Sandy reminds me about the importance of taking care of myself, because I do, for the sleep part. I often say sleep is highly overrated. So that's one area in my life where I do need to catch up. But thank you for the reminder. I appreciate that.
So, Sandy, you sound like somebody who is, well-read and experienced as far as having an understanding of what both Edie and I are talking about. How have you come to this place, in this space?
I've been very fortunate because I'm in a profession which promotes health and healing and promotes clarity. And without those things, you cannot be the best you. And if we're not taking care of us, we can't take care of anybody else. And everybody has that as a very altruistic goal. Oh, I want to help people. But you have to be the one that's healed first in order to be able to help others. And that's where my life has come. And that's where I've been able to be blessed that way and have had a great experience in knowing Edie for probably 15 years now and just being so proud of the things that she has accomplished. And it's fun to be in her wake.
Well, of course, you know, you have your own wake as well.
Absolutely.
Now, why did you choose chiropractics?
I did not. Chiropractic chose me.
Uh-huh. Okay. Reached out and grabbed you and said, you're coming in here.
Mm-hmm. I was 6 years old when I first got adjusted. And at 13, I said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a chiropractor.
Wow.
Because I saw that it was so much more than just pain relief, but it was wellness, and it was something that people have been looking for and especially now are looking for, and that's personal responsibility when it comes to healthcare.
I've often thought of, because I used to get weekly adjustments back in Phoenix from a friend who actually had a radio program I produced, and so she graciously said, hey, come in every week if you want, and, you know, what have you. It was wonderful, and the way I looked at it was the skeletal structure is bound together by rubber bands, and when the skeletal structure gets out of alignment, those rubber bands, if not brought back into the proper position, will start to lock in that abnormal position. And so what you do, in a manner of speaking, and this is obviously very simplistic, is you realign that skeletal structure so that the bands will hopefully take that correct form again.
And you cannot easily participate in cuddle parties unless you have that kind of flexibility.
Ah, okay. Well,
right, Edie?
Right.
Well, I would assume, I better not assume. Are there chiropractors on staff at these cuddle parties?
No, there are not. However, there are, you know, people that gravitate toward cuddle party tend to be healers, and some of them have been chiropractors, and massage therapists, and, you know, people that are very good with their hands. So,
But there are, and the two of you, ladies, I'm hoping you're familiar with this particular character. There are a lot of Hank Hills out there who don't like to be touched. Mm-hmm. They don't even want their mothers to hold their hands with two of their hands, let alone hug them. And yet, I would understand, too, that people are not going to gravitate to a cuddle party if they have those kinds of issues. But there may also be those who do, who say, you know what, I need to step outside my comfort zone. I need to find out what's going on here. Do you deal with those kinds of issues within the context of cuddle parties?
Oh, yeah. I can't say the touch-phobic people come to cuddle party, but touch-hesitant, touch-reluctant people come to cuddle party, people that are shy, folks that haven't gotten enough nurturing touch in their lives, or touch has been overtly sexual or abusive. In some people's cases, they live and work in low touch environments. You know, they work in little cubicles, and or they live alone. So, cuddle party is a way of inviting people to go beyond their typical experience. Now, as you said earlier, it is a non-sexual event.
Mm-hmm.
PJs stay on the whole time. Hands stay on top of PJs. It's not, you know, some people are disappointed to find out that it's not an orgy. Some are relieved to find out that it's not an orgy.
Right.
And it is only for adults. You need to be 18 to attend, at least 18. And the age range, the one cuddle party, I had an 18-year-old, and the oldest was 79 or 80 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just lovely. And because it's non-sexual, what I say is that a cuddly body is a cuddly body, male, female, whatever size, whatever age. And it's about the love. It's about the nurturing. But that's only one component of it. That's what gets focused on. But it's really a relationship and intimacy building workshop. Communication, boundary setting, ways of saying yes to what you want in life, no to what you don't want, not just around touch, but every aspect of our lives is what gets dealt with there.
And Sandy, you've participated in these cuddle parties you mentioned.
Yes, I have.
And for how long?
I was only at one of the parties so far.
Okay, and what was your initial response or reaction when you first walked in, and then how was that different from when you left?
I have to say, say it was a little bit uncomfortable at first, but then again, going into a room with 20 people that you've never met before can be uncomfortable in any situation.
Mm-hmm. But and why did you go the first time?
I went because I have a philosophy that every single day you should do something that takes you out of your comfort zone.
Mm.
Every day do something that gets your heart beating a little faster, mm-hmm. and you know that that place is where you're growing.
I remember Leo Buscaglia said once that you better learn something new every day, and if you haven't, when you go to bed at night, you better be willing to, if necessary, throw open the window and jump out into the snow, if that's the case. Learn something new.
I think I'd rather learn something else than jumping out into the snow. I live in Pennsylvania. I'm not going to do that.
Well, I understand. I can appreciate the concern there.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, that's great.
At the party, Edie makes it very comfortable mm-hmm. so that the very first thing she does is set out the ground rules. And that's really important because people want to know what they have no idea what to expect. So they really do want to know, am I safe? Is it comfortable? What can I, you know, what do I have going on for the next hour of my life? And by having her laid out really clear, you have a complete faith and relaxation that you're safe.
Wonderful.
And I think that's important.
Well, Sandy, thank you so much for calling. We really do appreciate it. And I'm going to go ahead and keep you on the line because apparently, Edie, we have the Pennsylvania contingent calling the program today. Yvonne is on the line with us.
Oh, hi.
Yvonne?
Yeah.
You are there. Edie is on the line with you. And
well,
Sandy
how
from
lovely.
Sanderson,
hi.
Pennsylvania. Well, how do you know Edie?
Oh, my goodness. I can't tell you how long I've known her, but it's been years and years and years.
And you've participated in the cuddle parties?
No, she hasn't got me there yet.
She hasn't gotten you there yet. Okay.
No, she's tried.
So tell me about what you've learned through and from Edie.
Well, I've learned, I'm not sure that I can actually practice it yet, but I've learned persistence. And also, I don't know if you know it, but I think that Edie's a clone.
A clone? Of whom?
Oh, no, there's just so many Ediths.
Oh, okay.
She has such energy that not one person can do that, what she does.
I see.
Extraordinary. So I'm in awe of her.
So Edie, you've been playing the multiplicity game a la Keating.
Yes. Well, hopefully, you know, the copies of copies of copies.
Yeah, don't do that. Always make a copy of the original. Always make a copy. So, Yvonne, tell me, you say you've learned persistence.
Yes.
Have you felt that level of persistence in stepping out of your comfort zone from time to time?
Oh, for years.
Such as? Give me an example. Give me an example.
Well, it's a strange thing that Edie would mention about changing her name, because I decided was going to do that some time ago, too, for the same reason. And I'm very well known. My full name is very well known. But I've been divorced since 1980, and I've still got it.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to change it, and I'm going to change it to the name of a cousin of mine who had died, which was my first spiritual experience with him when I was 10.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Can you share with us that first spiritual experience?
Well, absolutely. Actually, I wasn't. I was 9, and it was during the Blitz in the Second World War in London. And I was asleep. We just had a raid. And suddenly, someone was wiggling my toe, and I woke up, and there was Lawrence. And I said to him, what on earth are you doing here? He was in the Royal Air Force. And he said, well, I've just come to say goodbye. You know I love you. Take care of your mother, which every 9-year-old wants to hear, of course. Gave me a big kiss. He said, I'm going on a... He was a dispatch rider. He said, I'm going on a very serious mission, so you won't see me for a bit. And off he went. And the next morning, I went downstairs, and my house was in total chaos because at the precise time he'd be wiggling my toe, he was shot. And when I get stressed, even today, all these years later, somebody wiggles my toe. I know he's with me. All I have to do is lean back, and he's there. And what that did was open up, when you talked about going out of your comfort zone, of course, my family, a huge family that I come from, all thought I'd lost my marbles. And didn't hesitate to tell me so. And I shut that down for a while, but ever since that time, I'm really, really geared into the spirit and channeling and all that kind of thing. You know, I also work, my main work is working with bereaved parents, and I encourage them to be aware of what they sense around them and not dismiss it.
So in other words, the children who have passed on mm-hmm. are in some way, somehow trying to communicate with their parents that, hey, it's okay, I'm okay kind of thing.
Yep. And mainly that they're distressed that their parents are so terribly upset, which is certainly understandable from a mortal point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Human being, or Ogmandino referred to us as human becomings.
Yes.
And that is something that I think is very real, because people would deny that. And I say to them, you've got that little sense of comfort. Don't question it. Because immediately, in our Western culture, we pop in our heads,
yeah.
not our hearts and souls. And Edie and I have talked about this endlessly. I mean, mm-hmm. she's just such a living example of what it is that I talk about.
Well, you've mentioned somebody who's very near and dear to me, Ogmandino.
Yeah.
It was through him. I've actually had, I had the pleasure before he passed on of interviewing him back in the early, mid-80s, actually. And it was through his book, The Greatest Miracle in the World, mm-hmm. that that I'd have to say really transformed my life and the direction that it went. It also led me to my first wife and an extraordinary 15 years in that. But he had some wonderful things as far as his main character, Potter, in that particular story and the rag picker story and all
oh,
of that
indeed.
Different things.
Yeah.
I have to say that it was extraordinary because I had the privilege of having that. I read that book, recorded it, and it was aired on a radio reading service in Phoenix the week of Christmas that particular year of 82. And it actually is a great Christmas story.
Yes,
I think it
is.
It would be great if someone were to turn that book into some type of a movie or a television, a made-for-TV movie kind of thing. It would be fabulous. Well, Yvonne, let me ask you, before we go on our next break here, and by the way, we have not only Edie Weinstein, we have Sandy and Yvonne from Pennsylvania, and they all know each other through this commonality of conversation that we've been having here on the program. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com and also archive these programs. And if one, two, or all three of you are certainly up for it, what we'd like to do is continue this conversation following the broadcast in our after-interview segment that can be heard by going to our archives page and listening to the after-interview following the full one-hour interview. So it's certainly up to the two or three of you, if you'd like to do that. It would be wonderful to continue this conversation, even though we still have 12 minutes of the program left. But there's just so much that to discuss and to talk about. Yvonne, you said that you had this spiritual experience at the age of 9 in London.
Yes.
At the time, you said at the time of the Blitz?
Oh, yes.
Okay. How have you had similar, other than the fact that you said also that when you become distressed, you feel the wiggling of the toe.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any other like experiences of a spiritual nature in that regard?
I have them most of the time. Excuse me, I have conversations with people.
Hmm.
Like, I mean, I can tell Edie because she knows that I talk to myself a lot.
I don't have any fights.
She understands totally. Yeah, as long as I don't get into trouble. It's just that I have this kind of sense about things.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of automatic writing.
Wow.
Just the flowing. And that's a great comfort to me. That gives me a lot of information
yeah.
about the direction I'm supposed to go in.
Go ahead.
What she says is so important in terms, and she doesn't put it this way, but I say, whatever you do for yourself, that's what you're going to attract in other people. Like, I have people in my life who are so, she talked about blowing her own horn or something like that, which I think is great. I'm hilarious. I'm a very funny person when I present. I'm very, very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I attract very funny people. Although there are major problems in my life, my family and so on, challenges, health, so on, we laugh a lot. And I truly believe that laughter and humor has saved me
wow.
my whole life. And that started during the Blitz. And I have never really sensed any kind of communication with people that strong since that time.
Sandy, I want to address the same question to you. What have you had any, I hesitate to use the word unusual, so we'll just say supernatural or spiritual experiences that a lot of other folks probably wouldn't understand?
I think in a lot of ways we all have them every single day. They're just in varying magnitudes.
Mm-hmm.
I think anything that is coincidental, the way we'd look at it, interpret it as, wow, that's really cool that that happened. I was just thinking about that person and they just appeared. I think each of those are little bits of magic that appear in our lives. And if you're open to them, you can find them.
I guess that's kind of what I said to my mother when she asked me that sort of that same question, if I'd ever had any supernatural experience. I says, well, I wouldn't know because they all seem so, I don't want to say ordinary, but it's just like, it's just part of my day.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Interesting. How about you, Edie?
Just like Sandy and Yvonne said, every day, all the time. As I mentioned earlier, there are no ordinary moments. Whether you call them everyday miracles or I call them cosmic coincidence. As Sandy was just saying, you think of somebody and they show up. Now, I've had experiences where I think of somebody that I haven't seen in 20, 30, 40 years and they show up. Or I think about something and it's almost like instantaneous manifestation. And I've come to, I guess I take it for granted, I've come to expect that that's just how it is.
Mm.
And whether you call it psychic ability, intuitive ability, being tapped into the source, whatever it is, it's our birthright. I think it's something that everybody experiences. So to me, everything is a spiritual experience. It's all divine.
I would have to say this radio program is also, I have no control over the direction that it goes. And of course, when I called you on Monday and I just reminded you, hey, we got something coming, and I get the email, I wasn't concerned about, oh, gee, what are we going to talk about? Because I knew that we'd have plenty to talk about. I had no idea in my wildest dreams that I would be speaking with three women from Pennsylvania all at the same time on the program. And it's wonderful. And I thank you all for participating in the program.
Yeah.
See,
your dreams really do come true.
Yes, they do.
Oh, yeah.
You get three goddesses on the phone at the same time. You can't beat that.
I love it.
And I can vouch for the fact that they are indeed goddesses.
Wonderful. Well, if you'll stay there, we're going to take a short break. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. New paradigms for a new world as I catch my breath, and we'll take a short break and we'll be back to wrap up the live version. We're going to continue with the after interview after we go off the air. We'll be recording that, and that'll be at the end of the interview that you'll be able to go to on the website, richarddugan.com, and listen to. Stay tuned.
While the holiday season easily produces the heaviest mail volume, the U.S. Postal Service is busy all year long, delivering more than 212 billion pieces of mail. That works out to about 1.5 cards, letters, magazines, and packages for everyone in the nation every day. To handle this volume takes 786,000 employees, working out of nearly 37,000 postal facilities around the country. Profile America is a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
Remember the stories your family used to tell?
July got married, 1913, when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Well, close.
Yes, very swinging sound here in the Bilhart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804. Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804.
Are you sad or angry about past events in your life? Would you like more joy, love, and peace? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Minds to learn how to talk. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I have with me not only Edie Weinstein, who has a website, liveenjoy.org, is a part of cuddleparty.com. I also have two other lovely ladies who are on the line from Pennsylvania, Sandy and Yvonne, and we're talking about all kinds of wonderful things that are happening, and we have a new decade that we're entering next Friday, as far as our calendars are concerned, a new year, a new decade, and as I like to look at it, the ladies, a new opportunity to sort of wipe the slate clean and start fresh and say, you know what, I don't care what I did or didn't do in 09. I'm going to start doing some fabulous things, turning those ordinary things into extraordinary things.
You're here.
Edie, let me ask you before we wrap up this segment of the program. It's usually my final question to my guest. You have done a lot of things in your life, including having a marriage and of course, moving forward in that process. And you've just done numerous different things. But this is what you're doing. Why this? Why now?
Why the work that I'm doing now?
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't not do it, because it's what I'm called to do. It feels to me to be all about transformation, and we have the opportunity to recreate ourselves anew every day. I get to decide, you get to decide, Yvonne gets to decide, Sandy, anybody, all of us get to decide who we are today. We're not our history, we're not our traumas, our past experiences. We are brand new every day because we say so. We get to decide that for ourselves. And that's the Bliss Mistress and Bliss Master journey, is how do I live that new me every day?
Well, I think that's part of what we'll talk about in the after interview, because a lot of people do not feel that they can change. They're trapped in the stories or the dramas that have been created, that they've created over their lifetimes. Mm-hmm. And those are very real to them, and they find it very difficult to get away from those kinds of things. So I think maybe that may be a direction for us to talk about in the after interview here on Tell Me Your Story, if you folks are willing to do so.
Sure.
Love to have you all on the program. Edie, let's give out some information so that people can get a hold of you, find out more about you, and just touch base, connect with you.
Sure. Again, my website is www.liveenjoy.org. If you're interested in Cuddle Party, it's www.cuddleparty.com. And there's yet a third project I'm involved with that we didn't talk about that maybe we can talk about in the after.
Mm-hmm.
But it's www.liveyourpeace.com.
Live Your Peace,
which is a worldwide peace project that I'm producer, co-producer, and participant in.
Wonderful. Well, ladies, stay on the line. I thank you all for joining us here on the program. I appreciate your input and having you here, and I look forward to having maybe all of you back on again in the very near future.
That'd be wonderful.
All right. I'll have the three of you stay right where you are, because we're going to continue on the program talking about New Paradigms for a New World. Tell Me Your Story is the name of the program. 3 p.m. Saturdays is the time, Pacific, and richarddugan.com is the website. Until next Saturday at this same time, which will be a new year and a new decade, love to all, Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year, and we look forward to talking with you in 2010. And we continue here on the program talking with my guests, Edie Weinstein. We also have with us two ladies from Pennsylvania, Yvonne and Sandy. I'm going to put it this way, Sandy. You basically, you're a chiropractor. I say that with all due respect.
Mm-hmm. I respect that.
And Yvonne, I'm going to say that I'll put you under the category, if I may, of spiritualist.
You may.
Okay. And we are talking about a lot of different things on the program today, but one we're going to dive into, I think, is the whole business of making new choices for our lives. And Edie, you had mentioned during the live broadcast about a website called it's liveinpeace.com.
Liveyourpeace.com.
Liveyourpeace.com. First of all, define for me what you mean by peace.
That's a pretty broad broad question. But the way that it feels to me is acknowledging that peace is, I don't know who said this, but peace is more than just the absence of violence. For me, it's a sense of knowing that all is well, that peace begins within. You know the song, Let There Be Peace on Earth, mm-hmm. Let It Begin With Me. Years ago, it occurred to me, and friends of mine rewrote the lyrics to the song, it occurred to me that if we say, Let There Be Peace on Earth, that acknowledges that peace doesn't exist already. So I prefer, now there is peace on Earth, and it has begun with me for everything in my world. Healing modality? It's about the idea that everything in our lives is connected. That, in fact, Joe Vitale, who was one of the speakers in the movie The Secret, told a story about that. You may want to have him on the show as well. But he talks about the idea that everything in my world is of my creation. And I'm not saying that in a grandiose kind of way, but I'm responsible for who I attract and how they show up in my life. So for me, when I be my peace, just like being my bliss, then I attract more peaceful people and more peaceful circumstances. And it's about embodying peace every day. You know, a sense of equanimity, a sense of, all right, this is how it is right now, and I might not like it, and I can fetch and complain about it, or I can flow with it and say, okay, what's in this that I can learn from?
So in the process of living one's peace, do you have any special tricks or steps or guideposts that we can use to work towards that?
Mm-hmm. For me, it's about acknowledging where in my life I don't feel peaceful, where I have that icky kind of feeling in my gut, like, oh, this doesn't feel right. You know, what's this about? And I'm able to be truthful with myself and say, all right, this doesn't work for me, so what am I going to do with it? A friend of mine has this wonderful exercise, and I don't know whether she created it, called the, I think she calls it the unhappy hour, where you spend 5 minutes just complaining about everything, ranting and raving and getting it all out. And I've started doing that. Like, if something doesn't feel fair, this sucks, I don't like it, how come, it's not fair, you know. And I stomp and storm around. I don't do this in front of most people. I just kind of do it by myself sometimes. And then I get it all out. Then I can kind of let the tide settle a little bit instead of being this tumultuous, churning ocean. So that's one trick that I use.
Mm-hmm.
And meditation, yoga, being in nature, talking things out, crying if I need to, writing, definitely. You know, writing is my passion, my purpose, and my career. So I write about whatever it is that's not feeling quite peaceful in my life. And acceptance, compassion, because we're taught compassion for other people, but we can't truly be compassionate towards others if we're not toward ourselves. And that's been a lifelong journey. And you know, both Yvonne and Sandy have been great teachers for me in terms of learning self-compassion.
And how about you, Sandy, in terms of seeking out your own inner peace?
It's funny. About 4 years ago, I sent out an email to a lot of my friends, and I wrote, it's winter time. I know where to go during the summer. I love to be outside in nature, but where are the places that you go to find that peace, to find that spirituality and that centeredness? And it's interesting because I got a lot of answers back to do with either their church, their synagogue, still they go for a walk outside. Somebody had recommended a local facility. But for the most part, people wrote back to me and said, oh, I can't wait to hear the answers because I also seek a place like that. And some people wrote back and said their tub in their own bedroom, in their living room, on their most comfy couch. And I wrote back and I said, unless you're inviting all of us there, we need to find another place.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized that it's up to us to find those places. You can find spirituality, you can find inspiration in the littlest moment in your life if you live according to the philosophy of you must be present to win. Because all around us there are these special things, but sometimes we have to look a little harder. And yes, for me it is going to my bedroom or someplace in my house or being with a friend or having sushi or finding these fun things in the everyday moments. And for me, that's where the inspiration comes from. We don't do enough quiet time. Mm. Most of our time is spent with noise.
Now, Yvonne, I'm curious as to how you have managed to find your own inner peace. As with many of us, we've gone through a lot of different experiences in our lives, but certainly nothing quite to the extreme as a young child going through a war right in their own backyard.
That is very true, and it's amazing because when 9/11 happened, I was instantly stunned, and in fact, I sat in my office and I said, no, not here, not again. That was my response. But I also used it as a kind of catalyst to help people who were really going through a lot of, I can only use the word terror at that time,
mm-hmm.
because they'd been there. And so I regard my peace as a gift. From past experience that we could say, oh, you know what, I wish it could have been an easier, softer way, but it wasn't, and there's a reason for that. And for me, it's my mentors who have helped me enormously. My primary mentor is Dr. Viktor Frankl.
Mm.
His book, Man's Search for Meaning, just saved my soul, without doubt. And then there's Dr. Seuss, who's another one.
Ah, green eggs and ham, I love.
Oh, well, Dr. Seuss says, be who you are, say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind.
Ah, yes, yes, I've heard that before.
And I live by that. And then the people who come to see me, that I'm just so inspired by them and their courage. I really love courage. I'm kind of addicted to courage. And I see it in so many people. When Edie mentioned before about her husband and the process that he went through of dying, I watched her in that hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw courage that was phenomenal and just overwhelming and full of love, not knowing what was going on really because, you know, hospitals decide what they're going to do.
Yeah.
But she just exhibited this incredible serenity, whether she felt it or not, that's what came through. And I love her for that, because she passes that on to other people. And for me, also part of my being at peace is to be accountable. You know, for years and years, I would blame this and blame them and whatever. And really, as she said, you know, she's responsible. I'm responsible. And it's not... I'm going to quote somebody else, and maybe you can tell me who said this. It's not what life gives you, it's what you do with what life gives you. It's one of those things I wish I'd said myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea where it comes from, but it's so true to my life. No question about that. And being accountable, not pointing the finger. I remember I'm in a program for, 39 years, and I remember the first meeting I went to, a woman said to me, when you're pointing one finger at someone, three fingers are pointing back at you.
Mm-hmm.
And I never forgot that. So all this is a part of me being at peace with myself. And also that serenity prayer, which really says you can do something about this. And if you can, do it. And if you can't, let it go.
I'm curious from the three of you, and of course, Edie, you are a minister, and I found it interesting you are actually able to perform weddings across the United States, whereas usually you have to have a state license, isn't that?
Mm-hmm.
No, everything is different. And Yvonne is also an interfaith minister. Ah. And I have to tell you, Yvonne is part of the reason why I went to seminary. She graduated from the new seminary, was it a year before I did?
Yes.
2 years?
Because Michael was in the group that following that year.
Right. And Michael, my husband, had been going to seminary as well, and he had completed the first of the two-year program when he died, and I took his place in the class and did the coursework and got ordained instead. So every state is different. I do marry people in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware. That's my primary area, but I can, anywhere that allows a non-denominational minister to marry. There are some states where I have to apply. Like when I married somebody in Massachusetts a number of years ago, I had to petition the state there to, I had to fill out paperwork to do a one-time wedding there.
Right.
But we are, both Yvonne and I are able to marry people all across the country.
Well, give us a little synopsis of your spiritual background as far as, because you didn't, I don't know, did you start in this space spiritually?
Or no.
Where did you come from?
Well, I was raised in a Jewish family, went to Hebrew school till I was 16, and became a bat mitzvah, went to services every Friday night. We practiced Judaism in our home. We were not Orthodox. We were kind of the middle ground conservative, but not, it's not like politically conservative. It's just like middle ground Judaism. And in addition to that, my parents encouraged my sister and myself to learn about other traditions. We'd go to church with Christian friends, and we'd have people at our Passover Seder of all different traditions and backgrounds, my parents' friends, our friends, and we were taught it's all God, but our primary practice at home was Judaism. When I got married, Michael was what he called run-of-the-mill vanilla Protestant, which was the United Church of Christ, and then he was going to Quaker meeting when we met, and we created what I would call an interfaith family. When we adopted our son Adam, we raised him primarily Jewish, but with an interfaith flavor to it. Learning about other traditions, we went to an interfaith community called Pebble Hill, which is in Doylestown, in this area. And my spiritual practice was kind of honed and polished in college. I learned about Eastern religion. I learned about meditation and yoga a little bit in college. And I've kind of added on. I have a dear friend named Alan Cohen, and I don't know if he's been on your show, but he's just remarkable as well, and he's a spiritual teacher. A lot of his work is Course in Miracles. And Alan tells a story about speaking to a group of two different stories, Unity ministers. And Alan was an Orthodox Jew at one point, very observant from what I know. And at one of the gatherings, one of the ministers said, Alan, are you a Jew for Jesus? And Alan thought for a moment. He says, well, yeah, I'm a Jew for Jesus. I'm an Alan for Allah, a boy for Buddha, a Cohen for Confucius, a man for Moses. Whoever's throwing the party, I want to be there.
There you
and
go.
That's my spiritual practice. What I say is that love is my religion and God's too big to put in a box.
Yeah.
I think of myself, somebody used the term Jewish pagan or spiritual gypsy. That's kind of me. that's what it is.
How about you, Sandy?
Well, I was also raised in a Jewish family in North Jersey and attended synagogue, loved going. I still love going today. But I find that although the teachings of organized religion work for some people, what works best for me is just studying different religions, studying what's out there, and really, truly listening to my heart and doing the right thing for the sake of it being the right thing, not according to a dogma or a doctrine or what someone's written I'm supposed to do, but rather making sure that I am doing unto others as I want them to do unto me.
Right, right. And Yvonne?
Yes.
Tell me.
Well, you've got three Jewish women from Pennsylvania. I was raised in a very Orthodox house. My grandfather was very, very strict. But I have come away from that. I really am interfaith. I don't really have a basic religion. I believe in a higher power. I'm a big angel person. But I think and again, I don't want to keep on about this, but I'm just telling you from my perspective that having been raised in a war and having realized how many wars are created because of religious differences, that was what got me looking at life differently from a spiritual point of view. So I'm more of the spirit, and when I talk about spirituality, I mean spirit of this, like, for example, who I saw and what they did in wartime. My mother's house was a house that people who escaped from the concentration camp would go through her house. And so I heard stories I never should have heard when I was a little girl. And so from that perspective, when people intimate my religion's better than yours, then they have a real problem with me. And I just don't even like to hear that. Mm-hmm. So mine is really of the spirit, and my definition of religion is doing good. That's what I think it means. And I see that a lot in these difficult times where churches and synagogues and temples and all kinds of religions are raising money and giving food to people who don't have it, who've lost their homes and so on. That's religion.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that I had an incredible experience back in the mid-late 80s, and I was certainly doing my own searching. It started about 17. But at that time, I was sort of looking to belong somewhere. And I guess the angels were certainly looking out for me, because what I came across was a group of people who accepted me, who didn't ask me to join. That was going to be my choice and my decision when it was my time. And we would go to the weekly gatherings. They were called firesides. And we would just sit there and talk about religious and religious matters, spiritual matters, whether it was from the Bible or from their writings. And the next thing I knew, I was on my way to becoming a Baha'i.
Ah.
However, after a year and a half of going to these firesides and going to many of the other events and going to the services at the local spiritual assembly and what have you, there was one step I just couldn't take. And I realized that I had joined for the wrong reasons, or that I was about to join for the wrong reasons. But what I loved about the faith was that, as you stated, Yvonne, the Baha'is say that if you accept one of, as they say, the messengers of God, you must accept them all. If you reject one, you have rejected them all. And so I thought that was great. And the way that they resolved conflict or dealt with different issues within the local community or on the global level with the International House of Justice in Haifa, Israel,
mm-hmm.
With a group of 9 people, like our Supreme Court, only there are no dissenting votes, and that whatever the majority votes on is the direction, because the whole purpose is not to have, sides. It's to resolve an issue. It's to deal with what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see that happening very often, do we, Edie?
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately not. But
and so what can you tell us about the website and what it has to offer for us?
Live in peace.
To live in peace.
To live your peace.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's live. I don't know whether I said it correctly, but it's live your peace.
Live your peace. So how do we do that through the website?
Well, first of all, it's www.liveyourpeace.com, and it was created by another friend of mine, Ruth Ann Wood. And Ruth, I met. This is one of those cosmically coincidental experiences. I met Ruth when she was 13 or 14 years old. Her mother and Michael were friends, and Ruth would come to these open house gatherings that another friend named Uta Arnold would host in her home. And Ruth is an extraordinary writer, so we started calling her Ruth the Poet. So we fast forward, and Ruth is now in her late 20s, early 30s, and when she's getting married, she asked me to marry her, so I officiated at her wedding to Jason. And then we've stayed in touch since then.
And then when President Obama was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize and people were objecting to, oh, it's too soon, what has he done, Ruth starts thinking about all the dissenting voices in her own mind that tell her, you know, what have you accomplished? Who, you know, what gives you the right to say that you're a writer, a speaker, what have you? And she has her own website called Scripting for Success, which has inspired me because she and I have worked together with the idea that when you write about what your goals, visions, dreams are, as if they've already happened,
mm-hmm.
you know, now there is peace on earth and it has begun with me. Now I am already what I say I want to be. So she said, what if I had 10 seconds, meaning her, to speak to the Nobel Committee about my peace? What would I say to them? And then she said, oh, I have an even better idea. What if I could gather peacemakers together for a day or an afternoon and put together a workshop that gets videotaped and, you know, made into a 6-minute documentary, into a film, and send it to Oslo and get it all over the world? What would they say? So back a few weeks ago, a group of, I think there were 18 of us, gathered together at another spiritual community called Circle of Miracles, and we did an afternoon workshop called Live Your Peace, and it was videotaped by a wonderful retired filmmaker named Bill Jersey. And Bill, I think, is either 80 or close to 80. He's remarkable. And the videotape was made from cuts, you know, and clips from the all-day workshop, the afternoon workshop. And it basically was a bunch of people sitting around talking about peace.
Mm.
And age range, probably, again, 20s to 80s. And it was remarkable. So we've also, people have also been since interviewed on the website as well. So if your listeners can tap into this website, you'll learn about Ruth. You'll get to watch the video. We encourage you to spread it far and wide. We want everybody to see this. And she did actually send it to Oslo. I don't know if, you know, any of the Nobel Committee actually watched it. But that's, it's just amazing. And she, you know, and Ruth deserves all manner of kudos for this, for putting this together.
And that website is liveyourpeace.com.
Mm-hmm.
All right. As a matter of fact, I seem to have stumbled upon it.
Yeah, there we go. Yep.
And at the top, it's, of course, here, it's Scripting for Success.
For Success,
and that's
right.
Ruth.
Right.
And there's the video.
And that's Bill.
Mm-hmm. That's Bill
Jersey right there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So people can go there and get more information, get involved, find out how they can follow through on this. Are relations challenging, health issues, let's see, a need for self-improvement or stress reduction stopping you from fully living your peace? Well, learn from these peacemakers. And, of course, you just click on the video and you're going to learn something there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the website is liveyourpeace.com, and go there and get further information. My goodness, it's hard for me to believe that we've been going for almost an hour and a half
mm-hmm.
and talking about all these different things, and especially this area. And the three of you, I mean, you make an extraordinary team, I must say.
We do, yeah. Don't we?
Yeah, do you guys actually know each other? Have you and Sandy, you and
Yvonne? Is this Yvonne Kay?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
You know each other. Okay, good.
Now, what does that mean, Sandy?
We met in Evie's backyard.
Ah.
Oh, yes.
Wonderful.
And I also listened to you when you were on WWDB.
Yes,
thank
and
you.
One thing, you know, one thing that you don't know is Yvonne had a radio talk show on a Philadelphia station for how many years?
18.
Wow.
18 years. And she was just remarkable. I mean, Yvonne has been an icon, a staple in the Philadelphia holistic spiritual recovery community for a long time.
Well, maybe we should have you on for a whole hour.
Yes, both. Well,
both
I would recommend both of them on your show. Absolutely. I have tons of people to send to you.
Well, I would love that. We're looking for not only guests, but we're also looking for sponsors as well as supporters of the program in any way, shape, or form. So that would be wonderful. I want to ask you three ladies a final question before we wrap up here. We'll just carry this through for about a half an hour here, and we're just about to the end of that. As far as your individual futures are concerned in terms of the work that you're doing. Now, Edie, you've mentioned that you're working on this book as well as another, but what are some of the other endeavors that you have, maybe you haven't even started yet, but you've started formulating thoughts and dreams about?
You're asking me, doing what I love to do. My coach, again, had recommended that I come up with this affirmation that I am a well-respected, abundantly compensated, I'm thinking it out loud in my head, abundantly mm-hmm. compensated, world-renowned, sought-after writer and speaker. That's what I'm playing
hey,
with right now.
Terrific.
Yeah, and I mean, the way that I think about it is for the last 20-some years, I've interviewed a lot of the most beloved wisdom teachers on the planet, and the message that I share is what they share,
mm-hmm.
and I see myself right there with them. I see myself of that caliber, and then I get the, oh my God, what am I doing? Who, the Marianne Williamson quote, about our self-doubt
mm-hmm.
comes into play, and then I have lovely people like Sandy and Yvonne to kick my butt too and say, what are you talking about? You're supposed to be up there too.
Yeah.
So that's living my bliss, is doing what they're doing. You know, the line from, was it When Harry Met Sally? You know, the orgasm scene.
Oh, yes.
Where, I'll have what she's having. Well, that's it. I'll
mm-hmm.
have what she's having.
Okay. Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, how about you, Yvonne?
Well, I've been working since 1951. In addictions and grief and all that kind of thing. And this month, earlier on, in a tea shop, I did three performances as Mrs. Bob Cratchit of A Christmas Carol from her point of view.
Really?
And I decided, I'm a storyteller, but I don't want to write them. I want to tell them. And after all these years that I've been on this planet, I have so many stories. And that's why I want to find some kind of stage somewhere. I can't be an actress because I can't rehearse. I'm so spontaneous, useless to try. And, when I used to do commercials on the radio, if I didn't get it right the first time, forget it, get somebody else. So I'm very, very spontaneous, and I just had a ball dressing up as Mrs. Cratchit and doing that. And that was something that just hit me with all the stories I have from my 76 years on this planet. But really, I want to tell.
Well, wonderful. Well, we look forward to hearing them.
Well, thank you.
And Sandy, how about you? What, from your perspective as a chiropractor, but even more than that, what do you see for your future? Where are you going to go?
My purpose in life is that I kindle the inspiration. And in order to inspire others, you have to live an inspired life. And through living a better life, what I hope to do is to glow as I'm going through it and get others along the way that say, you know what, I want to be a light in my own life. And I may do it on a local level, I may do it through my own office, I may do it on a community level or even a larger level.
Mm.
But every day, it's still in process in my mind as far as where I'm going, and I look forward to that creation.
Wow. I'm with you there, with all three of you in that regard. I mean, we all have stories to tell, and we want to share them with people, and hopefully they will inspire and encourage others to continue moving forward. I will never, if I can help it, ever use the phrase, learn from my lessons, because that is not the way that it works. We can only learn from our own lessons.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to thank you ladies, all three of you, Sandy, Yvonne, and Edie, for joining us on the program and also taking this extra half hour in the after interview to share with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you.
This has been great. I'm Richard Dugan, and this has been the After Interview with Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we hope that you'll join us every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time and on the internet at richarddugan.com. Until next Saturday, love to Lal.